I'm here with Eli Henley and Zara Kand. Can you introduce yourself for me, please? And we'll start with Lauren.
Well, I always start by saying where I'm from, which is Joshua Tree. And I live in 29 Palms now, which of course is right next to Joshua Tree. And I very much consider myself a desert writer, a desert artist. The desert informs so much of my imagination and my creativity. I teach, although it seems sort of occasional at this point due to COVID. I'm married to a wonderful musician and writer named Jonathan Moll. And I got a really cool buddy named Zara.
And my name is Zara Kand. I also live in Joshua Tree. I spend most of my time oil painting. I consider my style to be symbolism. And I am a private chef. That pretty much sums up what takes up most of my time here in the desert. And of course, hanging out with awesome Lauren.
Did you grow up in the desert, Zara?
I did not. Okay. I've lived all over the place. I've been living in the desert for the last 5.5 years.
Okay, cool. And the desert very much is a part of this collection, right? How does it kind of show up in the work?
It definitely screams the desert. You can feel that in Lauren's vivid descriptions of the animal and wildlife. The visual aspect, it's laden with, you know, desert landscapes and whatnot. We definitely try to give very much a desert feel in this work. Wouldn't you say, Lauren?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's very much rooted in the poems and in the paintings. All of our images are set in the desert. And the neat thing about having your images set in the desert is that the desert so easily transforms into any imaginative landscape that you can conceive of, because it is so wide open, because we have these moonlit nights, because we can see the stars so well and the plants are so strange that it can just very easily take on this otherworldly. A lot of people compare it to the moon, even though there's nothing on the moon, and there's a lot here. So that's a pretty cool thing about the desert, is depending on how you're looking at it, it can become something new.
Yeah, it's like a wide open canvas. Anything can be expressed within all the little crevices, and just the openness.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the jackrabbits that show up so much in this book. Can you kind of speak to why that is?
Sure, I'll go first on that one. I've been thinking about these jackrabbits. It really started for me with the first time that a jackrabbit caught me off guard in such a way that it appeared to me as a small child. So I had this, you know, just a couple of seconds, I was like, oh my God, there's a child. The way that they hunch and the way that they sit is very much like a curved back of a young child sort of looking at something on the ground. And I'm looking out into this, you know, the Choya field that is, you know, my backyard. And, oh my God, there's a kid out there. And so for me, the jackrabbit, and it catches me off guard often, where I'm like, is that a dog? Is that like, what is out there? It's large. It's quite large for, you know, not being a predator, right? And it catches me off guard. And I feel like I'm seeing something different almost every time I see one. And it kind of brings out this motherly instinct in me that I'm like, oh my goodness, there's something out there that needs my help. And Zara painted the jackrabbit just beautifully. She painted the jackrabbit of my dreams in this book.
Well, I wanted to, because you seem to have such a strong affinity for rabbits. So, and I relate to all of what you said about them just now.
Yeah. So you two have collaborated before. I'm thinking of the reading for Whole Night Through, which is one of Lauren's books. But how did this collaboration come about?
Yeah, so we have collaborated several times. We've done ekphrastic poetry and painting exchanges, which is always great. And when COVID hit, when we found ourselves in the beginning of quarantine, I think we were, because of all those unsettling feelings, we had to turn that into creativity somehow. And we both found out that we were creating some works, just kind of dealing with those new emotions, and decided that we should turn it into something constructive and work together and produce some kind of booklet that maybe could inspire other people during this time.
Yeah, I think Zara summed that up beautifully. And I will just add that since people can't, you know, see the book right in front of them right now, it is a full color chat book. We ended up going, we originally were thinking, okay, we'll make a little booklet, a community offering. And then that turned into, no, let's make the best quality thing that we possibly can and still make it a community offering and use it, you know, to raise money, which we'll talk about later on. But, yeah, it's a really beautiful book.
It is a very beautiful book, and COVID-19 is very much present in it. I mean, you mentioned the virus several times explicitly. How does it inform the work?
Well, I think as Zara mentioned, it spurred us, being in quarantine, spurred us into action to seize the moment and do this collaboration. But I think I can speak for both of us when I say that we wanted to express some of the anxiety of the moment, and not just our own, but try to express the general anxiety that everybody all over the world was feeling. But each poem, either explicitly or implicitly, has to do with emotions that arrive from the virus.
So you describe these poems and paintings as emotional landscapes. What does that mean exactly?
I like to describe it as a whatever intense inner world that you're experiencing, that's then being shown in a way that others can understand. So it's a highly personal interpretation put into a way that, that's put onto your environment. And it's more that the story is being told by the emotion rather than the specifics.
Yeah, I think that's a great explanation there. And what's so interesting, I think, about this idea of an emotional landscape is it goes both ways. So it's translating the emotion into the landscape, and it's also translating the landscape into an emotion, but the images are rooted in the flora and the fauna and the landscape of the desert. This is a book that really focuses on symbols and things, very much full of nouns, and those nouns are rooted in the desert landscape.
And the poems are relatively short, which isn't to say that they're not vivid themselves or beautiful in themselves, but Zara, how did you create such vivid paintings from relatively small amounts of text?
Yeah, they are definitely very rich. I think that she packed a lot, they're very concentrated. So she would send me a poem and I would then create an image based on that. And I definitely have to read through them several times. The first time being just absorbing the feeling, and that would give me the foundation that I'd be working with. And then I'd go back and pay attention to the details and the symbols in her poems, and then apply them in a visual way. So it was a lot of back and forth. I definitely had to spend a lot of time with each poem.
Yeah, I was just always really impressed at how Zara was able to do that. I'd be like, oh, here's a strange one. What are you going to do with that? I was always so impressed at how she would capture, the emotion of the poem. And also just so glad that our styles went together so well, that we were both going for, sort of strange and dreamy and brief, but saying a lot with a little.
Yeah, I would add that these images are actually done in very much a different style than I normally work with. My when you look at my other bodies of works, they're definitely sharper images. And for this body of work, I wanted to go with a more dreamy kind of loose feel, because I just felt that that was appropriate for these emotional landscapes.
Definitely. And what about the feminist element in all of this? Can you kind of speak to that?
Yeah. I would say that we both recognize that feminist art, it should acknowledge what we are rather than what we aren't. And that being empowering all aspects of ourselves. And so for this series, we wanted to show that it's more about what you, when times are tough, it's more about what you do rather than say how you're suffering. And we wanted to create a really beautiful thing out of all of this. And I feel that we did that. We spoke to the vulnerabilities and took the weaknesses that we were feeling, but turned them into strengths.
Beautifully said. Yeah, I agree with that. Just the making. I think that, you know, women have always had to make do with limited resources, and they've had to, you know, stretch groceries, stretch time, stretch energy, stretch. And, you know, you have this speaker who does feel very much responsible, has a sense of anxiety for the suffering that is around her, and is very sort of conscientious and aware, but also allowing herself to go through her own ups and downs.
And there's a lot of like self-reliance in this, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the very act of making a book or making any kind of art or music or building a house, making something during a very difficult time is an act of resiliency and self-reliance, but also making alliances with so much division when it's possible to work with someone else or a group of someone else's, even if it's, I mean, we weren't able to physically get in the room together. So we had to work that out. It was all through the computer, but you know, we reached out toward each other and built something. And I think that speaks volumes of self-reliance and of relying on others as well when you need to.
There's so much that you can do with creativity. Creativity, it opens up worlds.
Yeah, and so you had to go through the computer for all this. Like you said, you couldn't meet up in person really. So how did isolation inform this process of creating this chapbook?
We definitely had plenty of time to sit with ourselves and kind of stew in our emotions and are just trying to make sense of what was going on in the outer world, and just imagining all the confusion that everyone else must have been feeling. And so, yeah, creating this book was sort of like also an attempt to create a bridge between ourselves and others and what we imagined as this state of anxiety that the world at large was experiencing and still is. So yeah, the a lot of the themes you see in the book are definitely about a lot of self-reflection and reflecting on the world at large.
And so the desert can be isolating itself even before COVID-19. How has COVID-19 changed life in the desert?
I'll jump on that one. I think Zara will back me up here when I say that our little town is fairly busy and has been. Lots and lots of visitors. So I'm sort of answering this question maybe in a way that you might not expect, right? But you think of the desert as being, you know, isolated and quiet. And it still is in a lot of ways. And yet, understandably so, since quarantine started, people have been fleeing more populated areas and wanting to come out to the desert. renting Airbnbs and filling up the campgrounds every available spot. And downtown Joshua Tree is very, very busy and populated. Now, this is good in some ways because our small businesses have, you know, really been suffering. So I'm not saying it's all bad. I'm just saying there, it doesn't feel actually as isolated as perhaps it did at one point, but you can still find, I think, solitude out here. There's still enough room to do that. And I personally, you know, I don't live in a neighborhood out here. I have space around me. And so I still get to experience, you know, that quiet. And I think plenty of us still do. But the town is definitely teeming with visitors right now.
Yeah, that's exactly put. I mean, I think it's busier this year than it's ever has been. So people, I understand wanting to escape whatever crowded environment you're in to go to a more isolated place, and you feel like you're maybe safer that way. But yeah, I mean, that's not really the case when everybody's doing it. So it's interesting. But sadly, a lot of businesses out here have gone out of business. We've seen those changes. A lot of the smaller mom and pop shops have gone out of business. So that's sad to see. And it'll be interesting to see how the town resuscitates itself in that regard when this is all over.
All right. Can you read some poetry for us?
I'd love to. From the Moon, As I Fell. Poems by L.I. Henley and paintings by Zara Khan. Eyes open, I begin, a stone in the roots of a catclaw tree. That was just this morning. Each day brings the threat of rebirth. The mantra, get it right, pleated into my skirt. If I ever was part of a litter, they surely left no trace. Sometimes I sing, Ollie, ollie, oxen free, into the damp beneath yellow pepper grass, and wait.
Slung, as in hasty delivery, as in catapult, time. A luxury reserved for saints and rivers. I am in a mood today. There is a virus killing the elderly, the compromised, and I am among the compromised. Aren't we all? Aren't we all? Many of us feel starry-headed, lobbed in the ice plant, speared 6 feet apart. This tingle, this pulled thread, our arms outstretched. Maybe we miss each other. Maybe we've never been closer.
Soft pummel of another morning overslept. I am as dense, as low, as gray as peyote, unable to name the range of mountains right in front of me. Thankfully, I still know how to ration. Thankfully, there's more coffee. The president calls the virus an invisible enemy, like weevils in the rice, arsenic in the dust. It's been there how long now, that dark figure on the outcrop of granite?
First sight, a fish hook in bloom, the fruit long, smooth, red among the gravel. Mammillaria, as in nipple-like, as in mama is awake now, mother of what's to come. Every time I raise my eyes, the sky has changed. Following rainy periods, the landscape is marked by brilliant flourishes, which sounds like feverish, rainfall prolonged. It feels like drowning, they said.
Clay, gypsum, mica, sandstone. These are certainties ingredients, but they do nothing to fill a belly or keep a mind afloat. Headline, 100 ways to cook beans. Pinto, black-eyed, cranberry, navy. Pick out the stones, wash, shove your hands deep into the bowl.
And singe is yet another word for burn, though less destructive, and sometimes fixes what's been frayed. Burn lightly the desert sage. I'll make a smudge bowl of my abalone hands. If we are lonely, at least we are feeling. Make a gift of your burdens. Give to me that ragged bouquet.
Wind on brittle bush sounds like the last time you whispered to a stranger in a crowded theater. Excuse me, sorry, sorry. Now I want to know, what did all of those knees I brushed against feel like? Some petals are so achingly soft, like touching nothing at all.
Saltbush, winter fat, crow's feet at the eyes. In my dreams, I'm always 20-something, hard-bodied, roving, lonely hills. There is no field guide for desire, no entry to tell me. This is a devil's claw, and this is a whispering bell. And this one will go dormant, and this one catches fire in the slightest breeze.
For me, for you, the folded note of daylight. It's true, the wildflowers will leave without fanfare, silently and in waves. I'll be eating breakfast or sorting beans when the last one blinks out. It will be almost painless. For you, for me, there will be more wild things, fires, flowers, more. I get out of bed, open the blinds. I wave to you from my porch.
Beautiful, thank you. I wish people could see the paintings, but I guess that's the limits of radio, so.
That's why they must check out the book.
Yeah, and how do we do that? How can listeners buy the book?
There are a couple different ways through both of our websites and through local stores. I'll start by giving you my website. Zara can give you hers and tell you about the stores. So my website is just lihenley.com.
And you can find it also on my website, zarakond.com. And it's also available online through Space Cowboy Books bookshop.org page. And for those of you that don't know what bookshop.org is, it's a wonderful alternative to buying new books online as opposed to buying them on Amazon. And the authors are able to profit better through this system. So anytime you want to buy a new book, definitely check out bookshop.org.com. So it's available on Space Cowboy Books bookshop.org page.
And sales will be donated to the California Fire Foundation's SAVE program, right? What is that?
Yeah, so it's a program that gives essentially like cash gift cards. They're just as good as cash for people who have been negatively affected by the California wildfires, either lost their homes or whatever their situation is. And I found this program. It was on a list of reliable charities that you know the money is actually going to get to the people. I found it on the New York Times, and it's highly rated. And so that's part of why Zara and I chose this this program for our book sales to go to. And so between when the book came out a couple months ago and December 31st, all funds are going there. So I think we've raised about $200 so far. It'd be really awesome to double that by December 31st so we can help out as many people as possible.